welcome everybody to our next talk here at Hall 6, the 12th Networking Truth. Our next speaker is Jonas Lund. He's an artist from Sweden, currently homeless. No, he just arrived, came back from Brazil and now lives in Berlin. He's a multiple talented guy. He does photography, paintings, websites, and so on. And he studies art world trends and behavior. He has many solo and group exhibitions. He has an excellent website. Please go there and look at all the art he does. And today, Jonas will present something of, or some stuff on his attempts to hack the art world, from designing algorithms to data mining, and discuss how the 12 networking truths, which is a RFC published in 1996, are related to positions within his artistic practice. So give him a warm welcome to Jonas Lund and enjoy the next talk.
Hi, thanks so much for clapping, and thanks so much for CCC for hosting. I'm Jonas Lund, I'm an artist. Currently based a little bit everywhere. I will give a very sped up talk because it's many slides. I will try and talk pretty fast. We're going to start with the first rule of the networking truths is that it has to work. And in this talk, I will somehow use the art world network as a isolated infrastructure to use that as an example of how you can attack or not attack, but explore different types of network systems. So this is this somehow the foundation for the current understanding of what is art. This is the institutional theory of art. It is that art is whatever the art world says is art. And it's not only that the art world decides what is art or not art, but also the art world decides what is good art, relevant art, quality art. So it's like it's a bit like this. Because you have a bunch, like a whole institution, which defines what's included in the institution. So it seems to me that this system is pretty ripe for exploitation. You can, if you can unlock how the internal structures operate, you can use this to get ahead in the art game, pretty much. So I approach this from the kind of structured, to counter the illogical way of the art world, I thought to approach it through a kind of pretty straightforward way. So I started by making an art world database consisting of artist institutions, galleries, curators, auction results, and exhibitions, largely from these four sources, Artfacts, ArtNet, Mutual Art, and Artsy. For those who don't know, Artfacts is kind of an artist ranking website where you get points based on what type of exhibitions you've made. And Andy Warhol is number one, and Pablo Picasso is number two. So it's a pretty serious. So I built a ton of different JavaScript scrapers to collect all of this data, because there is no comprehensive data set at all about this information that's kind of easily queryable. Download everything, organize it in a database, then, like the magic black box of the algorithm, do something, produce something as a result or as a comment on this, and then feed it back into the system. So the first somehow approach for this was to make a curatorial ranking algorithm. The curator is the critical point in the to access the art world or to get ahead in the art world game. If you know the curator, you can get access to exhibitions in galleries, museums, and different institutions. So this is the top 100 highest ranked curators in the world, sorted by who, what artists they worked with, and in what institution. So if you study this and you look at it, you can figure out who to look for at the opening or who to look for in the museum. It's kind of like a Facebook of knowing the right face and introducing yourself. So we have isolated the players to impress in order to get ahead in our art game. The second part of the exploration with this database was culminated in an exhibition called The Fear of Missing Out, which was using the database as a basis for designing an algorithm that would output instructions for how to put together works of art. So we have the first step of finding the right person. This is the step of solving the art production. So not only I can rely on the outsourced algorithm to give me instructions for how to produce works of art. This is kind of rough approximation of how it's compiled. It's the database. I figure out the subset of the database that's suitable for me. Of this, I rate the artworks based on complexity, where the complexity is the estimation of a low production cost and a high monetary value. So it has like, it's easy to produce, it's cheap to produce, but has a lot of aesthetical value, basically. So it outputs instructions which gives me the title material, dimension, the color spectrum, and the location in the exhibition space for this particular exhibition. So this instruction is pretty simple. It's just a crash motorcycle. This is slightly more complicated. It's called the storage product crosses. It's a single channel generative video installation with four poster changers with line drawings on poster paper. And truth number two, no matter how hard you push and no matter what the priority, you can't increase the speed of light. And this is the Black Sunday satire. It's a ping pong table behind non-reflective glass. Door, the King's official mask product on canvas stool. Steve Ballmer, a fridge and six crates of beer. It's where the title and the piece is very self-explanatory. There's no real instructions. I think the subtitle for this should be Developers, Developers, Developers. The Shield Whitechapel isn't scoop, it's acrylic and silkscreen ink on custom rope. This is the more interesting in terms of instructions because the algorithm tasked me with putting a 7-minute, 50-second video loop inside coconut soap. So then I had to somehow improvise with some epoxy resin to cover this monitor and keep it going. This is my first ever made painting. It's a description, Albert, paint and ink on canvas, black steel frame. Parachute faces, diptych airways, two chairs, digital C-print. Since the NSA hasn't been here yet, watch closely for the removal of this sign. Paraphrasing the public library in Chicago, I believe, where you're not allowed to explain that the NSA has been there, disclose to the public that the NSA has been, but you're allowed to not disclose. So if you remove the sign, you know that the NSA has been there. If it's still up, it's all supposedly good. This is the Horizon Birth grayish blue. It's a concrete, it's like 250 kilos of concrete, plexiglass, and plaster. It's all the different types of works that come out of this algorithm. It's many different parts to this piece. I think that, in essence, it comes down to trying to figure out if there's a formula for determining what's a good quality piece and what's a bad quality piece, and if there's a way to kind of get ahead in the art world game by relying not on the whims of suggestions of subjective desires, but rather relying on like big data sets. And you say, okay, now instead of being inspired by something, you just use the data sets to provide, to get instructions for what's supposedly the most successful works of art. And this is, it's just overview. And then you get the press coming and asking, are algorithms art? Which is something. It is always something. So at the end, we feed this back into we get the closed loop. I take the data from the sources, produce works through it, and feed it back into the system so it can inform the next session. The next step is diversing from away from the database, but looking at how you would move around in a museum, or how you would move around in a gallery, and what's the optimal and most successful ways of installing the artworks in the space, and how do you quantify and measure this. So this is called Gallery Analytics. It's a spin on Google Analytics, which Google Analytics for the gallery space using Wi-Fi triangulation, relying on the open mesh routers. So installed in the mesh configuration in the museum using a third-party service, it can triangulate your position if your Wi-Fi is on your phone up to a meter's accuracy. So you can get the real-time overview of all your visitors. You can see the little router attached on the piece up there. Some things in life can never be fully appreciated nor understood unless experienced firsthand. So then in the end, you get like this detailed statistics of how your museum is performing. And you can see how many daily visits you have. You can see how many people pass by your gallery and not enter it. So that's like the people you really want to get at. And then you have to work on your window displays. And this is how it's mostly used, this technology right now in shopping malls, to see how well your window display is converting customers, basically. So it's like, and it's pretty stealth. It's enough with just having your Wi-Fi on passively, and then you can triangulate it because it constantly pings everything. You also get a live overview to see. And the green dot in this scenario is the artist, and the red dot is the curator. It's because you can isolate their MAC addresses, and then you know exactly where they are, so you can go. It's very useful. We're continuing talking faster. Okay, we're behind. This is a piece from 2014, which is other ways of winning at the art game, or other ways of manipulating your way or path into this. And this is taking a spin on the at the time the flip collectors or process-based abstraction that was going on a lot in LA, which is basically, in short summary, collectors buying artworks from the artist studio very cheap and in bulk, and then reselling them at auction for higher and higher values. So the poster boy for this was Oscar Murillo, where Stefan Simkovic, the most notorious flip collector, bought 30 works in 2012 for $1,000 each, and then in 2014 could resell them for $400,000. So it's like a massive increase. So then naturally, as artists, you want to get in on this game because you think that will benefit you. So I approached it from a pretty straightforward way. I made 40 paintings, which is a lot. It's basically besides the other painting, the first 40 paintings I ever did. And they're all kind of collages of already successful flip paintings. So I download like all the paintings I can get in as high resolution as possible from all the auction sites that are selling them. And then basically just copy-paste in Photoshop until I'm like sort of happy. It's always possible to stick multiple separate problems into a single complex interdependent solution. In most cases, this is a bad idea. Then they're covered. It's very hard to see, but the surface, because it's digital prints, the surface is covered with acrylic gel to give it kind of a plasticky textured feel. And every painting has a specific query from the database saying that, for example, this one is the select all from auctions where the age of the artist is between 25 and 30 and the nationality is French and he has made this amount of exhibition in this. And then on the back of the painting is a GPS tracker, which has a little SIM card inside of it with a data plan where every day it sends me a TCP socket message, like a data stream, to my server with its location, its altitude, its temperature, its remaining battery. And it also has the terms of ownership stamped on the back, which is just outlining different types of rules, such as that you can't tamper with the GPS device. And then this location data is shared online publicly on flipcity.net, where you can also see the location history of every piece. So you can see how it moves around. And I think of this piece as a kind of a collection of networked paintings that I inject into this system as a sort of like a Trojan horse. I can put it into the infrastructure of the art market system. And then it will end up at a collector's storage or in an auction or on someone's wall. And then I know exactly where. And I can pinpoint and I can follow. And I can get back some type of control or ownership over it, even though it's been sold to some collector somewhere. It's easier to move a problem around than it is to solve it. And then it ends up in auction, and then you think, okay, now the circle is closed again, because the purpose sort of a piece that's called Flip City is to be flipped. Although in this case, it had to be pulled because the terms of ownership on the back didn't go well with Christie's lawyers. So it's kind of like a funny thing that already shooting myself in the foot by including rules for the paintings, so it actually can't be sold at auction. Although Philips didn't have a problem with this, so that's good. It's like the lesser famous auction house. Okay, moving on to this piece, which is going further in trying to grow production, trying to expand and make more and more works. So this is somehow the future. you know, like, yeah, we're moving towards automation, everything. Something like 50% of the U.S. workforce will be without a job within the coming 20 years. So we have to think of different solutions for how to solve this. Universal basic income is one. Becoming an artist, which is sort of, in its essence, possibly inherently useless, may be an idea, because you're not actually, you know, good, fast, cheap, pick any two, you can't have all three. So some artists have figured out how to scale up and capitalize properly on the globalization and outsourced labor. This is Jeff Koons with his 150 assistants. He produces around 10 paintings a year, I think. So my solution for this was for a solo show in Amsterdam, where I turned the whole gallery into a factory, or kind of a studio, which was under live streaming throughout the whole thing. And I hired 6 assistants to work for me during the gallery opening hours. And they were tasked with producing works of art. I provided all the materials, everything they needed to produce works. They were tasked with this to inspire. I made kind of a 300-page manual book that all of them had to study, mostly with images, which outlined the current kind of meta level of process-based abstraction. Basically, when an artist figures out a seemingly unique way of producing flat paintings that hang on the wall, such as like, I put an aesthetic in my hand, my left hand, so I can't feel it, and then I paint, or I use like aluminum and I scratch it, or I do something which is seemingly unique, and then you produce a ton of them, which feeds into the flip collection, and then you have like a perfect cycle of production. So basically I made this, but in a more kind of networked way, where I tasked these assistants to produce work. Once the work has been done and deemed ready, we document it, upload it to a website where an esteemed advisory board gets to appraise the work and say, okay, I give this a 55% chance of, it's basically a slider between sign and destroy. So give it the point between 0 and 100. Then based on their appraisals, I would make a final decision whether the work should be signed and become my work, or if the work should be destroyed and just enter into a trash pile or for new material. It's sort of partly inspired by Olaf Eliasson, who has a studio with around 100 assistants in Berlin. And he has a kind of sessions with his assistants where they work on an idea for about 3-4 weeks. And then they have a session with Olaf and they present their idea for an Olaf Eliasson piece. And then afterwards he says, this is not an Olaf Eliasson artwork. And then they have to start over. So it's a little bit like this. You do the outsourcing and then you can grow your production and your set. It also has a fair labor agreement to ensure that the assistants are paid properly and they're taken care of. And it also has a very important rule, which says the assistant is prohibited from discussing, documenting, photographing, or sharing information or images in any forum, public or private, including but not limited to social platforms such as Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. So it's saying also that the assistant will receive 10 euros per hour in wage, which was a little bit low, but okay. And they get 5% commission if the artworks that signed sells. So I'd like to give incentive for making successful works. Truth number 8 is it's more complicated than you think. This is the instruction manual book, which has a kind of an essay to outline the current meta level of art production. Some good tips, some sizing guides, some kind of a commentary on the current auction. These two are by two different artists. They look quite similar. They sold for a total of £40,625. Some screenshots. And then halfway through the exhibition, there was a studio visit opening where we invite the public to come in and see where most of the artworks were presented. For all resources, whatever it is, you need more. And then here's some example of the signed paintings. So it's at the same time, like what they are appraising this advisory board. If you see the gray, this is like the slider of the scores. It's all based on JPEGs, so like none of them actually see the work in real. And in this case, it's some worry about the cracks in the painting. So that's the reason for not signing it. So cracks not stabilized for the future. One size never fits all. So I mean, at the heart of this, there's a lot of different thoughts about the whole surrounding art world infrastructure and what creates these type of situations. I think at the heart of it, what I was curious is to see if there, between 14 people in an advisory board, is it possible to find a sort of a consensus? Is it somehow a way to make a work of art that's just like, that's it? Everyone goes like, yes, this is the greatest work of art ever. And so far, I think it's hard to say for this. Maybe there is. I think the consensus within the art production only happens after the fact. Something when something enters into an archive or so. This is, more of the artworks. Every old idea will be proposed again with a different name and a different presentation, regardless of whether it works. In the end, the works that were not signed were stamped with denied on the front and the back and put into piles. And then we're moving on. This is another single piece which goes in towards the similar kind of direction, which is trying to figure out then, because the problematics from studio practice results in it's very hard to know what's a successful work of art. Like, what's a painting that would attract everyone? How can we get to this? So this is a piece that will self-optimize itself based on where the viewer is looking. So it has a gaze tracking camera in the middle, and then it sees if you're looking left or right, and then based on that continues to optimize different types of compositions. So it's like it starts with simple, I think this a video? Yeah. It starts with simple different colors, comparing colors, and then it picks you. For every session, you have a winner, basically, and then it just keeps on getting more and more complicated until it starts over and retests this assertion that is this good or not, pretty much. Keeps on going. It's something like, in the most typical way of looking at art, you as the viewer, you have to sort of align yourself towards the artwork and enter into the art, like the artist's reality or ideas. And in this case, there's sort of a reversal of this where you say that the artwork will always adapt itself to you, the current viewer, and it keeps on going. And the last truth is, in protocol design, perfection has been reached not when there is nothing left to add, but when there is nothing left to take away. And we're going to end with this very quickly. This is Strings Attached. It's the second series of the Flipped City, which is more towards taking back some type of control over what the people you work with are doing towards your work of art. So this is, again, a painting series which has terms of sale hand-painted on them, dictating different types of rules which can happen with the painting after the fact. So this painting may never be offered at auction. This painting must be offered for sale at a Philips Under the Influence auction during 2018. Should Philips discontinue the series, it must be offered at one of their day sales. And this painting may only be sold to one of the following collectors: Anita Sabludovic, Simon Dupuy, Beth Rudin-de-Woody, or Alain Servais. So you can decide, I can take back the control. The gallery has nothing to say anymore toward where he can place these works. These are the eight most notorious flip collectors from back in 2014. They were not very happy with this. This painting may only be purchased by a collector who agrees to purchase two more works by the artist before March 21st, 2017. This is a very common strategy among art galleries, by the way. And most typically, if you want to buy a specific piece, you first have to buy something you don't really want. So let's say you want to buy a Corey Archangel gradient, you first have to buy a video piece by another represented artist, and then that's it. This is another very, very popular strategy. This painting may only be purchased by a collector who also agrees to purchase donation. And donation is this piece. And this painting may only be purchased by a collector who will donate it to one of the following museums by March 21st, 2020. And it's Moderna Museet, MoMA, Tate, Hamburger Bahnhof, Lachmann, Stedelijk. And this painting may only be purchased by a collector who already owns works by all of the following artists. It's like the title is Good Company. It's H3D, Corey Archangel, Corey Wright, Simon Denny, Oliver Lark, Raphael, Evan, Timur. I know one guy who owns, I think it's only one guy. This painting may only be purchased by a collector who has appeared in art forums, seen and heard at least 5 times. And this painting may only be sold to a Golden Globe winner. And this painting may only be sold once every other work in this series has been sold. And it has a website where it keeps track of the validity of the terms. And if they're, if someone disagrees or does something which is not allowed, the work becomes null, like voided. The art certificate of authenticity becomes null. And that's it. And I think we have 5 minutes for questions.
Yes, thank you.
Or actually, we should watch this video. It's 1 minute. Okay. Can we do the switch of the sound? Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
See this?
Yeah.
This the kingpin. All right? And he the man. You get the other dude's king? You got the game, and he's trying to get your king too, so you got protected. Now the king, he move one space any direction he damn choose, cause he's the king. Like this, 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 all right? But he ain't got no hustle. But the rest of these motherfuckers on the team, they got his back, and they run so deep, he really ain't gotta do shit.
I like your uncle.
Yeah, like my uncle. And you see this? This the queen. She's smart, she fierce. She move any way she want, as far as she want. And she is the go get shit done piece.
Remind me of Stringer.
And this over here is the castle. It's like the stash. It move like this and like this.
Dog, stash don't move, man.
Come on, yo, think. How many times we move the stash house this week? Right? And every time we move the stash, we gotta move a little muscle with it, right? To protect it.
True. True, you right. All right, what about them little bald-headed bitches right there?
All right, these right here, these are the pawns. They like the soldiers. They move like this, one space forward only, except when they fight. And it's like, or like this. And they like the front lines. They be out in the field.
So how do you get to be the king?
It ain't like that. See, the king, stay the king, all right? Everything stay who he is. Except for the pawns. And if a pawn made all the way down to the other dude's side, you get to be queen. And like I said, the queen ain't no bitch. She got all the moves.
All right, so if I make it to the other end, I win.
If you catch the other dude's king and trap it, then you win.
All right, but if I make it to the end, I'm top dog.
Nah, yo, it ain't like that. Look, the pawns, man, in the game, they get capped quick. They be out the game early.
Unless they some smart-ass pawns.
That's it.
Thank you, Jonas, again. I think this video should be shown at every art school. Now we have about 4 minutes for questions. Well, if you have any questions to Jonas, oh no, 3 minutes, then please go to the microphones here in the hall. Yeah, please.
Yeah, just a thought experiment. Have you thought of this? If you manage to do this feeding of algorithmic art into the system iteratively, So you get the art collectors and the general public to like your algorithmic art even more, then you can narrow down all this art. And at some point, the system might reach a static state, so you created the final piece of art, basically.
It's a super good idea, yeah. We need a lot of assistance, but yes.
Okay, thanks. Another question here.
Yeah, everything you just talked about is pretty much completely new to me, so it might sound a bit stupid, but in FOMO, the arts you actually produced, I can't really believe that they came out of an algorithm. I think that I cannot really trust on you having an algorithm that generates art, so I'm kind of like wondering, what is this algorithm? What is it really? How does it tell you to produce art?
So. Yeah, that's a good question. I didn't go into detail properly into this, but basically it's a kind of Using the whole data set, when I rate the artworks for complexity, this is like me clicking through artworks and saying, okay, this artwork is less complicated than this artwork. And then as a combination of assigning different values to these based on what they sell for because it's collected from auctions, I can select kind of a figure out what's the most successful works of art, like get a score and say, okay, this is the ranking of the, like the easiest to produce but the highest value. And they have titles and they have materials and dimensions. And then use like a combination of randomizing this collection of saying I have this amount of production budget available. So these are the type of materials I can use. And then mix match with what's appropriate in for that. So it's more, I mean, it's kind of, yeah, I mean, it's an algorithm. It's just not super complex. That's it. And in the, it's also something else that the instructions are very simple. It's materials, title, and kind of a color spectrum. How they get transformed into works of art, it's me like reading the instructions and then thinking, okay, how should I do this? And then that's kind of like where the art is produced. And then the algorithmic idea just frames it in such a way that it's kind of addressing what is an algorithm? How can you get transparency into different types of algorithms? Is there any way anyone on the planet that properly understands how the page rank works or the edge rank or whatever, like black box, the inherent bias in all these systems? And I think it's more the suggestion rather than the like the super truth.
Okay, thank you. We have only time for a short question here from the audience. Please make it quick.
So which one of these series was your most commercially successful one?
The Flip City, for sure. Because that was like at the peak. After this, like that market kind of disappeared. All the people that bought these tons of artworks in bulk, like they don't buy art anymore. They buy other stuff. So that one's like was on the peak of this. So yeah, definitely. That was most successful.
You timed it right.
Yeah, that was good timing. Yeah. Lucky.
Okay, thanks again, Jonas. Let's give him a warm round of applause. And thanks for your questions.